803-803. If you got to go to work, get to work. Or if you're just at home relaxing with your cup of coffee, we hope you're having a good time. We just had a great, great conversation with our Congressman Troy Carter. Every Thursday, he tunes in with us and gives us some great information. He wanted me to let be okay to let our family know that Friday, May 27th, in the council chambers, he'll be having his town hall meeting for District B, along with Councilwoman Leslie Harris, and that's going to be at the 3 p.m. hour. That's this Friday. You can talk with Councilwoman Leslie Harris and the congressman. But today, right now, we are so excited. I'm excited. We got some great people representing the Xavier University of Louisiana, and they're in the house. We have Dr. Williams, who's here with LaKeisha Williams, who's professor and a doctor of pharmacy, drug information specialist here, and director of the community engagement program. I know I messed that up somewhat, but you're going to fix it up for me. And Tanisha Fields, also of the Xavier University of Louisiana Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities Research and Education. Thank y'all for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about COVID-19 and beyond and how to build healthy communities. So, Dr. Williams and Tanisha, we're familiar with Xavier, but not a lot of people know about the Center for Mental Health or Minority Health and Health Disparities Research and Education. Tell us about that work at Xavier and about the what we call the LACL partnership.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for this opportunity. Just to give you a little bit about the center was established almost 20 years ago. Okay. It was awarded an endowment that was awarded by the Minority of Health Disparities from the National Institute of Health. And particularly the goal was for just to be able to improve health outcomes. Mm-hmm. And within the center, specifically, how can we improve those health outcomes among diverse communities that are disproportionately affected by health disparities? And particularly three areas that it focuses on is community engagement, mm-hmm. research, and education, whether that's education of students, faculty, engagement in the community. It really allows us to be able to utilize the resources that we have, but take it to the community and beyond. Yeah.
And that's so important. You know, we had a caller yesterday. We were talking with a professor from LSU, and he was saying, but you got all this knowledge, but the community don't have mm-hmm. it. You know, we need mm-hmm. to get it. We need to receive it. So getting out that education. Talk a little bit about more about disparities. What do we mean when we say health disparities as it relates to the Black community?
It can be so many different things in regards to health. Disparities can range from socioeconomic status. It can mm-hmm. range from determinants of health, looking at race, looking at gender, anywhere where we see a disparity or a barrier or where it's not equal mm-hmm. as it relates to all of those different populations as it relates to healthcare.
Yeah. And Tanisha, I mean, COVID exacerbated or highlighted, illuminated, mm-hmm. unfortunately, yeah. what we already knew about disparities. But it put it on like front court or center stage. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, no, exactly that. It exacerbated disparities, but it really just opened up the box there, opened up like a can of worms kind of. And it's what the community already knew, right? But it allowed, I think, the nation to see mm-hmm. what our communities, our local communities have been experiencing. Our churches already knew what the work that they were already doing, the efforts that they were already making to address these health disparities and these health concerns and challenges. The world saw, right, and the nation, the world, right, globally saw in this pandemic that the conditions that our people of color, our African Americans, our Latinos, our Vietnamese populations, what they were already dealing with, the cardiovascular issues, the diabetes, that it allowed for COVID to really come and like run amok mm-hmm. in our communities. And so, it opened up that can of worms for us, I think. Negatively, we saw that, but then it allowed for these opportunities for us to now let's tackle this in a very real way.
Yeah. And then I know Xavier is in partnership with Tulane and with some others. Talk about that partnership and kind of what y'all have accomplished already.
Yeah. So the partnership is the Louisiana Community Engagement Alliance Against COVID-19. Excuse me. It's LACEAL. And in 2020, when we started seeing COVID disproportionately impacting communities of color and in all of these states, there were 11 states that NIH, the National Institute of Health, chose to focus on to provide funding to really attack and tackle, attack COVID, right? Address COVID in the way, the severity that it was attacking our communities, our churches, our families. And so they chose 11 states. Louisiana was one of them. And in Louisiana, Xavier and Tulane received the funding to be a partnership to really find out the concerns of the community, to engage the community in an alliance in order to decide on the best next steps and strategies to really to really see progress in the pandemic. So the goal of LaCille is to provide timely and accurate information about COVID-19 to our communities, to build trust. We talked a lot about clinical trials. We talked a lot about vaccinations, boosters, and really to inform the community, because there was so much, as we all know, misinformation.
Yeah, and you know, Doc, talk to us about that issue of how do you build trust? You know, most people who didn't know anything about Tuskegee, but they were like, well, Tuskegee. And this and that. They're like, you don't know what happened in Tuskegee. But, you know, but that mistrust is out there and it's real. And you know, how does this partnership maybe help to deal with that participation of African-Americans in clinical trials? I know the president of Xavier and the president of Dillard were in clinical trials. Talk about that work and the need for that work to go not only with this issue, but maybe with other issues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, really going to the community is important. Being able to make sure that the community has a voice and that they are involved in those decision makings. They're involved in the policies. They're involved in the conversations as it relates to, you know, situations like this with the pandemic or just in general. And I think when we think about, you know, how should we involve the community, that's very, very important, making sure that we go directly to them. And, you know, just specifically as it relates to what we've done is that we really wanted to make sure just, you know, trying to go to the community and say, hey, what are the barriers? What are the needs? How can we be able to decrease this mistrust? How can we be able to increase awareness? How can we be able to educate and really be able to, you know, address that elephant in the room. Let's talk about, you know, we've heard all of these situations. We heard about Tuskegee. We heard about Henrietta Lack. We've heard about all of the situations that have occurred, but let's really sit down and have a conversation about it and not necessarily just talk about the past, but what can we do now to be able to help us to move forward towards the future?
Yeah. Now, yeah, we mentioned the communities. Let's get specific. What kind of, what neighborhoods are we talking about here in New Orleans that you're actually working with? And what are you, what are some of their demographics? What do they look like?
Yeah, so the Louisiana Seal Project initially in 2020, and we've gotten the funding two additional years. And so we still have the funding for Louisiana Seal and are continuing beyond COVID. But initially we were focusing on those communities, those parishes that were disproportionately impacted, that were seeing the highest rates of mortality or of death. Because of COVID, due to COVID. And so that was East Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Orleans Parish, and Jefferson Parish. And the communities of being our, you know, our Black communities, our Latino communities, and we know our Vietnamese communities as well. But in the work that we did, although the funding, you know, allowed for us to kind of be focusing only on those parishes and on those communities, we can't exclude, right? There are so many neighborhoods. We went to, we were in Hammond, there's Shreveport, I mean, Northern Louisiana. In the work that we were doing with LaCille, we, you know, had many grant programs. We were providing funding to churches and to organizations to do vaccine drives and to do education. And if a church and an organization were in Shreveport, we're like, hey, let's do it. Because, you know, especially in the rural communities, there's disparities there as well. And our, we know that our communities know best what is going on the ground. So we didn't want to exclude them either.
And you know, the vaccines and vaccine equity, I've heard people talk about. Talk about a little bit about that work. And I know now, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, that the vaccine uptake has slowed. Do people think we're done with this thing? And you know, how much more work in the vaccine area that needs to be done?
Yeah, well, COVID-19 has not left us. It's still here.
That's right.
And so, of course, you know, and when we look at, in terms of us going out into the communities, that was very, very important because, you know, a lot of people and several people had their own ideas, whether that was from family members, whether that was from social media, whether that was from information that was, you know, on TV or wherever it may be. And so it was very, very important to make sure that we took the information, the facts, and allow the community to make their decision, you know, in regards to just really being able to bring that awareness to it. And so it really allowed us to say, hey, let's take our pharmacy team, let's, you know, coupled with Tulane's medical team and several community stakeholders, and let's really be able to go to the community. So, you know, like Tanisha mentioned, we really went to the communities and talked about vaccines. We talked about the development of vaccines. We talked about the side effects of those vaccines. We wanted to bring sure that we brought all of the information so that they would be knowledgeable about it. And because of that, we saw increased rates of administration.
Okay.
Some people, especially when it came down to it, they probably were like, well, you know, at first maybe hesitant, but when they saw the importance of it, you know, it really came down to, it's not just about me. And I can't just be worried about myself, but I have to be worried about the fact that I may live with my grandmother, I may live with my parent, I may live with an elderly person or someone that has a chronic condition that can be affected in a different way than I can. And because of that, we were able to see an uptake in the vaccine. We were able to see, you know, people that were hesitant before that were saying, hey, I'm not necessarily doing it for me. I'm doing it for somebody else. And I'm doing it because it is important for us to be able to see how we can eradicate this disease and be able to decrease these rates.
Yeah.
So even right now, you know, we see New Orleans has some of the highest COVID administration rates compared to some of the other cities in the U.S. And so with that being said, we're continuing to make marks, but we need to understand that we still have to make sure that we are having preventative measures and moving forward.
You know, y'all are doing great work. And I wanted to step back for a moment and maybe have y'all talk to the people about what is it? I know you're professionals. You've been trained in this area, these areas. But, you know, what's on the inside of you both that really makes you want to do this work? You still don't have to do this kind of work. What makes you want to do this particular type of work in dealing with health disparities? Who wants to start?
Yeah, I can start. You know, some of y'all that are listening, you probably hear my accent. Everyone's like, where are you from? Where are you from, baby? And I'm from New York City, and I grew up in Brooklyn and the hood. Brooklyn in the house.
All right.
It's in the house
today. I'm from
today.
The boogie down. You know they know that. It's a New York takeover today.
And Dr. Williams is from Louisiana. She's from
Orleans. All right. We'll let her stay. All right.
But, you know, and I grew up just seeing the disparities, seeing the issues, seeing, you know, only the McDonald's in our community and not the, you know, healthy whole foods, right, or affordable foods for us, and just seeing those disparities in the school system and the transportation. And so when every time I move the next step to go to a college or come to New Orleans, you see the same issues. Mm. It's different cultures, different, you know, unique identities, but you see the same issues. And so my, you know, passion or my work in life is to bring the community the education that I've been able to receive, the capacity that I've been able to build, going to school and getting all of those great things and what I was able to accomplish in my life thus far, bringing the community, the lay community members who may not have been able to the table, having their voices there because we have experienced similar and the same disparities and challenges in our lives. And bringing it to the forefront and allowing action to be made in urban communities, action to be done when we come collectively together and make our voices heard. Because there are strengths, whether there's education academically, there's education from the streets, there's education from, you know, in church, in your home, in your communities. We can come together and really make that change possible and happen. And so that's what I'm committed to and dedicated to.
And, you know, and I mean, what I hear you, a lot of times we talk about personal, you know, choices that people need to make. And that's true. But what you also indicated was that wherever you've been, you've seen these same systems operating negatively in Black communities in terms of, you know, economic issues and other things. And so we see that. What about you, Dr. Williams?
You know,
what brought you to this?
Same thing in regards to just being able to add what Ms. Fields, you know, mentioned and just really, you know, seeing what was happening within my community. I'm from Lafayette.
Okay.
Lafayette, Louisiana. And just in regards to just being able to grow up in a low income family, not having access to some of the opportunities as others and just really being able to personally face those disparities. Father, you know, passed away when I was 13 from emphysema. They didn't have certain certain treatment options. They didn't have certain, you know, things that were available like they have right now. And so just really seeing all of those disparities and growing up, the community was there to support me. And I said, I have to make sure that I give back.
Yeah.
I have to make sure that I do whatever it takes to make a difference in that capacity and just be able to find solutions, find, you know, ways of being able to intervene for our community. And, and it was, you know, when you look at the disparities, everybody is dealing with it. And just not necessarily having the education, not having the access, not having the awareness. And I felt that that was very personal for me to make sure that, you know, I take a stand and I make a difference. And it starts with one person. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to start with many, but it starts with one person in regards to just being able to move forward. And just, you know, being able to improve those outcomes.
All right. Yeah. And, you know, Lafayette, my son is in school in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful, wonderful place. And I know, you know, as a pharmacist, you're a pharmacist, correct? You know, that health professional is probably the one that most of us talk to more of, right? More than anybody else. You know, that's a wonderful role to take. Just on that note, I mean, how do y'all handle that? You know, every day, just being in front of the public and answering all the questions from baby rashes to, you know, to what I need for this or that. And because all of that helps, you know, people to feel trustworthy or trusting in terms of taking the medications, being compliant. Because with the black folks and our chronic conditions, issues of compliancy, right? Well, did you take your blood pressure medicine? Did you do this? Did you do that? After the break, I want you just to talk about that for a moment, and then we'll get back a little deeper into this partnership that y'all are working with the Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. WBOK, 1230, it's time for that break. We're back. 824. Having a great conversation here this morning with Dr. Lakeisha Williams, who's a professor and a doctor of pharmacy at Xavier University of Louisiana, and with Ms. Tanisha Fields, who is also with Xavier University and with the SEAL program, which they're actually going to dive a little deeper and tell us a little bit more about what that actually means and what they're actually doing. Who'd like to start? Doc?
So, you know, and when we look at SEAL, Community Engagement Alliance, just against COVID-19, you know, we really, like Ms. Tanisha Fields, it was important for us to partner with Tulane, along with my colleague, Dr. Crosser Wood, who co-leads this initiative as well. But what was important was that we reached the community where they were. So we hit the ground running and just involved different faith-based organizations, community pharmacies, community organizations. And first, what we wanted to do was identify what were those barriers. What were people feeling as it relates to COVID-19? What were those concerns? And so we issued surveys.
Okay.
I mean, we went door to door. We went to different places and really being able to issue surveys to find out what were those concerns. We had several focus group discussions based on the survey results, and it allowed us to be able to dive in deeper to understand what were people feeling and what were some of those fears and doubts. And that allowed us to really be able to go into the community from those conversations, from those discussions. We had an opportunity to really be able to go into the community and provide funding so that they could develop specific initiatives. And those initiatives range from health fairs to school drives to vaccination fairs. It was your whole range of so many different activities. And that was the goal. That was the goal for us to be able to go in, increase education about COVID-19, the vaccine, clinical trials. We had the opportunity to be able to vaccinate over 500 people just from those conversations.
Wow.
And I mean, from those
initiatives. We ring the bell when good things happen, right? Yeah, we ring the bell.
And just, you know, in terms of being able to reach more than 1,500 people as it relates to those constant conversations. And there's still work to be done. I know Ms. Tanisha and I and Tulane and Xavier, we're really, you know, working and collaborating in regards to where, you know, what's next.
Yeah.
And so we definitely going to talk a little bit about that as we move forward. But yeah. I know Ms. Tanisha may have something to add to some of those efforts as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. We work to bridge the gap between what was happening in the research. There was a lot of research being done, a lot of, you know, what's going on with COVID. Let's get into a trial. Let's do this. Let's figure out this new, very strange thing that's going on in the community and globally. But it was important for us to hear the concerns of the community. And like Dr. Williams said, over 1,500 people that we had those focus group discussions with, those interviews with, those surveys with. And what we heard from the community was, we need to trust. There was so much misinformation. There were so many myths about COVID-19. And, you know, we learned from our communities during those conversations that they really trusted their healthcare providers, but they really trusted their faith leaders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We partner with Baptist Community Ministries, an awesome organization that has a network of over 145, 150 churches, not just Baptist churches, but churches across the greater New Orleans area, in order to have a partnership with specific local churches in the community. Mm-hmm. And we had about 15 local churches that said, we're going to be your partners. We're going to go out and ask our congregations and ask our community members to take part in these focus group discussions. You know, we gave them a small incentive for their time, but it wasn't about that. They were excited to share and give feedback and say, hey, we trust these people. This is how we want to receive information. And so because of that, we were able to address their concerns, right? Do educational events, to do weekly newsletters for our partners and say, we've heard what you said. We also have heard that you said we want the researchers to come back to the community and tell us what you've heard. Yeah. Don't just come into the community, hear our concerns, and then never see us again, right? You never come back. But hey, no, we're going to continue to stand with the community and say we're fighting this fight together. And we know it's not just COVID, but it's COVID and beyond.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, the misinformation. I remember, I don't know if y'all remember this, but when COVID, you know, was first starting, even before the shutdown, maybe a week or so or two, it was, well, you know, COVID ain't for black people. You know, it ain't going to affect black folks. You know, it's just for other people. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was like, okay, that's not true. And, then it was like, then the complete opposite happened. Like, now it seemed like it's only affecting, you know, black people. Wow. And then, you know, and then when the vaccine came out, and then, you know, how do I put this? You know, some of the so-called woke black folk, like, nah, that's the white man is putting out the vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't trust that. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, we were praying for this, praying for a pill or something that can stop this ravage. And now we're not going to take it. Now we're not going to do it. And I know there are people who still, you know, feel that way and everything. So I don't mean to demean them. But it's just like, wow, you know, where do we go to make sure that we get good information that we can trust and everything? And you're right. You know, faith leaders, you know, now I being one, you know, I didn't tell my house to go take it on my own. I brought in a health professional, Dr. Vegno. From the city, and we did a Zoom. We were still Zooming, And so Dr. Vegno talked to my people, you know, and I had another black doctor, a good friend of mine, Dr. Anthony Mitchell, who's a graduate from Harvard Med School, and I said, talk to the people, you know, and he gave us good information about even how, you know, the vaccine was developed, and black folk were involved in the development of the vaccine. So talk about that in terms of what were the points and all the points that people need to hear specifically that you think turns their mind around related to some of this stuff, you know?
Gosh, I mean, you touched upon so many different things as it relates to that. I think that was, you know, like you mentioned in regards to just being able to fight that misinformation. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to, you know, we wanted to make sure that we didn't push any agenda on any of our community members or any individuals, but what could we do to bring that information? Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, in regards to bringing healthcare professionals, being able to bring people that we knew that could provide that education, that could provide those resources, that could provide that trusted information. That was the key. Mm-hmm. You know, just really being able to be honest, being able to be open, being able to open that dialogue and open that line of communication. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, like what Ms. Tanisha mentioned, is that, hey, you know, researchers may go into the community to be able to survey, but they may not necessarily go back and provide that information about what did affect the community.
You studied us, but then you didn't even tell us what you found out about us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what SEAL wanted to do different, because what we did was not only, you know, in terms of conducting those surveys and those focus groups, but we went back to the community and we said, hey, this is what is, you know, is going on in your community. Particularly, these are some of the barriers that, you know, that we're hearing. These are some of those concerns. And this is what we can do as a solution to be able to, you know, bring to the table, being able to bring to the forefront.
We're talking with Dr. Lakeisha Williams, Dr. Lakeisha Williams of Xavier, pharmacist, and Ms. Tanisha Fields, also of Xavier, about the LaSeal program, COVID-19 and beyond. How do we build healthier communities? And it sounds like to me, you know, first it starts by listening to communities, right, and being in communities, a bottom up, not a, you know, top down approach, participating with them.
Right.
How does mental health, though, play into this, if at all, you know, into all of this? Tanisha, you want to dump into that for us?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. In those conversations that we had with community members, we started off with COVID, but we ran the gambit in terms of what we discussed. And one of the challenges that came up, especially in our most recent focus group discussions where we were talking to the community about now clinical trials, it kind of, you know, went further than the vaccines, but now that there's clinical trials going on. But our community members talked about the other issues that are now plaguing the community that have been exacerbated, and mental health has been number one, consistently has come up as number one, because there's been isolation, right? There's been now families that have been together and tight. There's isolation on one end, then on the other end, there's families tightly close together, packed up together for 2 years, you know, maybe husband and wife that have been at work for 12 hours
That's
a day,
right.
Came back.
Who are you?
Right. And now they're together the entire day. And so there were just so many domestic violence.
Yes.
We heard a lot in the Latino community. We have a Latino community partner who does a lot of work with intimate partner violence and did education in Spanish to the community through social media and other platforms in the Latino community, Jambalaya News, et cetera, in order to talk about domestic violence and mental health and the partnership. So, yes, mental health awareness is so key and critical now. Not just now, but it's been exacerbated, I think, and mental illness rather. And so, you know, even with our center, the Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities, we did a number of virtual forums to respond to that, to even for frontliners in the COVID-19 pandemic, those, the healthcare providers and other frontliners, community health workers who have been doing this work, providing the education, seeing the death, seeing the losses, them being traumatized and seeing the trauma. And we had just forums for people to share what's been going on in their hearts, their experiences, and to be able to encourage one another. And we brought mental health experts as well to just encourage and to share skills and tips, rather, practices that could be used to maintain health and wellness in our minds.
Yeah.
Because our bodies, physically, that's not the only diseases that we can get. The only, you know, unwell, the only times that we're unwell physically, but mentally.
Yeah.
As well.
And, you know, Doc, I was wondering about, you know, the clinical trial aspect of this, the research aspect of this. You know, a lot of people probably never really heard about clinical trials. And but of course, in the middle of COVID, all we heard about was, you know, we were waiting for the vaccine, clinical trials. Do you think the fact that, were there adequate numbers of Black folks included in the clinical trials? And then secondly, do you think this is going to help in the development of other medicines that, you know, we particularly deal with, that perhaps, you know, sickle cell, other things? You think there's going to be some kind of lasting impact of this?
I think it definitely will. And I think it really opened up the opportunity for an increase in, you know, enrollment of our people of color.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, like you mentioned, you know, previously, when you look at the statistics, when you look at the demographics of those clinical trials, most times it's of our white counterparts, and it may not necessarily be of our diverse communities, of our Black communities or Hispanic communities or even others. And so this has increased. We saw a lot of our, you know, just Black individuals being, we had several people within the community and pushing within us that were involved in those vaccine clinical trials, being able to say that, hey, how are we going to know how this is going to affect us if we don't necessarily get involved? And so that was really the of opening in the beginning of that. You brought it up earlier in regards to just having that the knowledge base that, hey, you know, a black physician was at the forefront of the development of this vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so it really allowed us, you know, as a black community to be able to come together and say, hey, in order for us to understand how certain things are going to affect us, in order for us to understand what are some of those side effects, we have to make sure that we get involved in those clinical trials. And I think this has opened the door for more to come as it relates to, you know, other chronic conditions, as it relates to other medications. The hope is that we can have a diverse group of individuals within those clinical trials so that we can see how it proportionally and disproportionately affects all of those communities.
And now just a little deeper on that, what about the children now in terms of vaccines? I kind of lost track. It seemed like it's all over the place to me, but tell us where we are. How young now can you get a vaccine, and what is the hope, or what are they looking at in terms of vaccine?
As young as five right now. And I know, you know, I was looking at some information the other day where they were specifically stating in regards to Pfizer is now, you know, recommending an additional booster. And so what we're seeing is that even specifically with our younger population, they received a lower dose compared to adults. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they are going to require a booster because they have a lower dose and it wasn't as high as what that dose was in adults. But the trials are still ongoing.
Okay.
And so because, you know, times before we may not necessarily have had as many clinical trials involving children, they're continuing to follow those children. They're continuing to make sure that they're looking closely as to what are the effects. Are they having any effects? Mm-hmm. Is it affecting them differently, you know, as it ranged to older populations or older children? So there are so many different things that we see our researchers are looking at as well to make sure that we are continuing to improve this vaccine as we move forward and that it will be able to decrease, you know, those COVID rates.
Yeah. I know I'm getting ready to schedule my second booster. I felt insulted. They said, you're over 50, so you need to get a second a booster. but I said, all right. I'm over 50. I'm one of the old people now, so I got to go get my second booster. But that's all right. Tanisha, would you talk to us about that COVID fatigue? You know, people just don't want, they see you coming, they're going to run now. They don't want to talk more about this. I'm finished. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Well, how are you handling that?
Well, that's where we're done with this COVID thing.
I'm through. Yeah, that's right. I'm through.
We've been in COVID for too long. I mean, no, that's exactly what I guess our thoughts were as we were thinking about LaCille 3.0, Louisiana SEAL 3.0, which is the third round of funding that we have for this SEAL program with the partnership with Xavier and Tulane, because we understand that COVID is still here.
Yeah.
The issues of vaccinations and clinical trials are still important. But as we talked about earlier, there's health mismanagement now, right? There's mental health mismanagement. And what we mean by that is there are screenings that are not being done. Breast mammograms, cancer screenings, you know, we're not dealing with our mental health, domestic violence, all of it, social health conditions. And so we have to think holistically now. How do we use the model that we have put forth and implemented with LaCille, going to the community, asking these questions, providing funding to community organizations to respond to their concerns, providing education? How do we use that model to now talk about these conditions that were here way before COVID-19 came onto the stage? And so what we want to do with LaCille 3.0 is use that same model and really have the community, our community partners, own this thing and be shared leaders in this work. This is an engagement alliance. It's not just, you know, the researchers doing the work. We're all researchers, right? researchers is finding a solution to an issue and a problem that we collectively understand to be true.
Yeah.
And so we want to have our churches and our community-based organizations lead the charge, have a forum in their community, we'll fund it, and say, hey, what are the issues that you are experiencing right now?
Okay.
Whether it be, you know, you need more healthy cooking classes. We've gained some weight during COVID-19, right? And so, and then LaCille will provide the technical assistance, the education. We'll bring an expert. We'll bring our health and wellness center out, pharmacists, to provide those diabetes training.
Do surgeries.
We'll do the as much as we can. trying to build the capacity of the community.
Right. No surgeries. Don't call for the surgery. They're not going to pay for that, but they'll pay for you to show you how to eat right, okay?
Right.
No, but that's definitely needed, especially here in Louisiana. You know, I know, like, yeah, my church, like many churches, you know, every event and the fried chicken and the macaroni and cheese. Mm-hmm. And I said, y'all, I need some peas. Right. I need some collard greens. I need, you know, and cooked in a good way.
Right.
You know, don't throw no ham hocks extra in there. Mm-hmm. I know I love it, but don't throw it in there. We all need to change, you know, and the church can be effective in that. But, you know, I saw this data point. 81% of people ages 65 and older accounted for several COVID-19 related deaths. And, you know, the baby boomers. Mm-hmm. My parents, you know, they're both in their 80s, and thank God, you know, they've survived and they you know, have their shots. But we have a great number of black folks, you know, who are aged now due to the baby boomer population. Have you been able to talk specifically to them and mm-hmm. and any insights that you learned maybe from the elderly group?
Mm-hmm. A lot of our folks, and I'll let Dr. Williams take this as well, but a lot of our folks in those focus group discussions and the focus group discussions, which are just conversations that we have with a group of people, either Zoom or in person, a lot of our folks through the churches were in that generation, mm-hmm. In that population. And it was interesting to see that our elderly population, although those are folks that were in our senior saints, maybe I should say.
That's what we call it
in my church.
The age.
Season saints.
Well, yes.
They were actually more pro or more for taking the vaccine, those that we talked even though they were closer to the issues of Tuskegee and Henrietta Lacks and, mm-hmm. You know, just the harms done to mm-hmm. The black community and to the Latino community around health and diseases and chronic mm-hmm. illness. But I think for them, they saw the value for mm-hmm. the next generation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they really trusted their healthcare providers and their leaders.
I think that's it, you know, because they already had relationships. You know, a lot of the young folk who were saying, well, no, I don't know, they really don't have a primary doctor in the first place, a primary care doctor. And so there isn't that relationship, you know, that may account for that, as you say.
Yeah.
You know, Doc, you want to jump into that too about the elderly, seasoned saints?
Seasoned saints. You know, like Ms. Fields mentioned in regards to that was what we heard, you know, in terms of our elderly population. They had been through previous pandemics, mm-hmm. and so they experienced it firsthand. So when it came time for this, they said, hey, you know, I need to make sure that I'm going to be proactive. I want to make sure that, you know, my health is going to be optimal. And like Tanisha mentioned in regards to those were the higher rates of being involved in vaccination. But then also, too, they already had the access, or that was where the focus was. Mm-hmm. So when we think about when we looked at, you know, in terms of just that healthcare access during those times, it was challenging. Mm-hmm. For some of them may not necessarily have had, you know, access to be able to get their medications, mm-hmm. but hopefully they were able to provide, you know, obtain some type of support. And I will say, you know, those were some of the things that I saw firsthand just, you know, being as a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. My clinic where I'm currently practicing at South Broad Community Health Center, we started calling people. And we were going down the list and saying, hey, who is at the highest risk? Looking at our elderly population and calling and saying, hey, we want to just check up on you. We know that you're not going to
proactive medicine. Yeah. I like that.
You know, we know that you're not going to be able to come in physically and see your provider, but we can have a virtual opportunity. And then that's when we also identify some additional barriers. We noticed that a lot of our elderly didn't have a smartphone.
That's right.
So they couldn't do virtual. So we started having conversations and saying, hey, we'll connect you with your healthcare provider. You know, do you have access to being able to pick up your medications? If not, we'll have a delivery service to be able to drop it to you door to door.
Yes.
But then it also opened the door to see where those additional barriers were. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we saw was that everybody didn't have access to their healthcare provider. And that's what we want to do with LaCille 3.0 and beyond, is that to identify who still doesn't have a healthcare provider. Mm-hmm. How can we be able to, you know, serve as that liaison? How can we be able to bridge that gap? How can we be able to make sure that we're connecting you with some of our partners, whether that's a federally qualified health center, it's a clinic, or if it's a healthcare provider who can provide that additional education? That's where we're trying to go now, you know, and with COVID-19 and beyond, because we knew that a lot of that health maintenance was not taken care of.
Yeah.
And so now we're trying to see how we can bring, like Tanisha mentioned, all of the sectors, mm-hmm. both community, clinic, and also our education sector. And so what we call it is, we termed it as the name TWC4, Together We Care.
All right.
Community Clinic Connection.
Come on. And say that five times fast, though. Don't
TWC4, Together We Care.
All right.
Community Clinic Connection. And when you think about that, it can't be one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody has to be able to come together in order for us to be able to get through this.
Yes.
That's how we look at it.
Wow.
And so it's going to be important that, hey, we're going to our communities. We're identifying what are those needs. We're identifying what are those concerns. We're coming to you and saying, hey, we're bringing the resources that are necessary. You don't have to come to us, but we are going to come to you, bring those specific resources so that we can tackle those barriers, so that we can tackle those concerns. And then if we don't have those resources that are needed, then who do we need to contact? Mm-hmm. Who do we need to identify so that we can make sure that those concerns are addressed?
Yeah, I tell you what's really scary, and you know, and what I heard you talking about in terms of this health mismanagement, or then the lack of screening, because, you know, really for 2 years, people like, I ain't going to doctor, and the doctors were almost telling us, don't come see us unless you have to, you know, and we don't need to see you here and that kind of thing. But we think about the mammograms and the colonoscopies, and I know for myself, I was supposed to go to the dentist in April of 2020. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still waiting to do that appointment. So I need to schedule my appointment to go back there. I mean, no, not a big thing, so to speak, or, you know, but, as some other issues, but things that people have missed. And so I hope other, medical facilities, doctors, practices are reaching out like, you know, you've talked about, to say, hey, you know, you need to come back and get this. You missed this. You missed these things, so that, you know, things don't happen later on.
Yeah.
Wow. Y'all are doing great work. You know, what about masks? You know, I know, you know, the numbers have gone up a little bit here in New Orleans, and so the mayor, they're encouraging masking. But what are you finding out about masking in terms of the indoor places?
It's important to protect yourself, you know, and I know, especially because we got a little lax, especially with our festivals.
I was going to hold a mass burning thing a couple of weeks ago, but then I realized I couldn't. Okay, great.
And, you know, and I think it comes back because we were thinking that those numbers were going down, and it was going down. Yeah. We were seeing those rates decrease, but we found that, hey, with the virus, I mean, it mutates, you know, and as we saw in terms of us being able to get together, whether that was family gatherings, whether it was the festivals, whatever it may be, we saw those rates going up.
The virus
up.
Went to the festivals.
It did. It was partying.
The virus was partying.
And eating well. But it's very important that we just really, you know, send the message home that we still have to encourage those preventative measures. Mm-hmm. We still have to make sure that you're still wearing our mask, both, you know, in terms of indoors, depending on wherever it may be, and just really being able to practice those safety precautions. So that is key. And I know a lot of people, you know, may have varying views, but it's important, especially if you're going to certain places where you know that you may be more prone to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to make sure that you're still continuing to wear those masks.
Yeah. Well, like in boxing, they say protect yourself at all times,
protect
right? You never know when a hit's going to come. What about work? You know, people are going back to work, and there's still a lot of companies, you know, maybe doing hybrid or work from home situations. What are people dealing with? Do you have any idea of how people are dealing with the work issue? And some people have said, no, I like being at home. And so deal with it, boss.
Yeah. Yeah. People. I mean, Zoom has been a thing. I'm sure everyone has heard of Zoom now, if they did not hear about Zoom before 2020.
Yeah.
And I think it is important for us to continue to protect ourselves, to continue to, I think, mentally healthy and mentally strong as well. How do you deal with how do you keep your mind healthy?
Mm-hmm.
And for people to think about that, even as we're trying to balance work, and there are many people who are balancing work with kids and with teaching kids at home at the same time. And so the hybrid, I think, is great. I know there's still masking on college campuses, on Xavier's mm-hmm. campus, and I think it's awesome. And but there is the opportunity to work remotely if you can. But people are back in work.
Yeah.
But I think it's important, and I encourage even our churches and, you know, those employers to just stay encouraged, yeah. right, to continue to keep the protocols in place and follow the guidelines of our city mm-hmm. and of our state.
That's right.
And that's what's been key, too, because with LaCille is that we are saying, hey, you know, even if you're remote and you're working from home, mm-hmm. well, we can take these resources to you as well. So yeah. not only are we, you know, having face-to-face events and being able to engage our community, you know, face-to-face, but we are providing Zoom resources as mm-hmm. well, whether that's Zoom seminars, yeah. whether it's Zoom cooking classes, whatever it may be, we want to be able to provide the resources to where people are, regardless of the location.
Wow. So how can churches, nonprofits, communities reach out to you all to actually bring some of these resources to their doorsteps?
So they can visit our website, www.haltcovidla.com. That's HaltCovidla.com. They can follow us by going on that website and identifying resources. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're also available there, and we have several resources that are available on our website, on Xavier's website as well, in regards to being able to make that link to LaCille. And they can also contact us directly. We're in the process of being able to develop additional informationals where they can see how they can interact with us and being able to get involved in these upcoming initiatives. We're looking for faith-based organizations, community organizations, community pharmacies, whoever it may be that would be interested in partnering with us, not only just on COVID-19, but also going beyond. So if you feel that you have a particular concern as it relates to chronic conditions or whatever it may be, we want to know about that. And then that way we can see what resources that we can provide in being able to address those concerns.
Wow. Well, our time is up. You know, doesn't time fly when you're having fun?
Yes.
You know, Dr. LaKeisha Williams, Ms. Tanisha Fields, both of Xavier University of Louisiana, the Louisiana SEAL program, community engaging, talking to the community, researching with the community how to live healthy lives post-COVID. Thank y'all for coming in. And we need y'all to come back in again. Y'all going to come back again and talk
it.
To the people
we'll be back.
About
we'll
how to be healthy back. And do it right. Well, stay tuned. It's 8:53. We got Down by Law coming up. And then right after that, The Front Porch. You want to stay tuned to WBOK all day long. And I hope you have a great day. Thanks to WBOK. I'll see you later, alligator. Take care. WBOK, 12:30 a.m., What New Orleans is Talking About.